Hello, this is Frank Milarani. I'm a professor at the Massachusetts College of Pharmacy and Health Sciences in Boston. The CDC reports that each day over 130 Americans die from an opioid overdose, and more than 2.5 million Americans suffer from an opioid use disorder. We also know that over 400,000 Americans have died from an opioid overdose since 1999. I'm working on a project with a number of students, and we're capturing the work being done by individuals and organizations that are on the front line of the opioid epidemic. Our goal in this project is to shed light on the individuals and organizations who are working every day to make the lives of others better as they deal with the impact of this deadly and insidious healthcare crisis. Today, I'd like to welcome Bedford, Massachusetts Police Chief Robert Bongiano to our podcast. Welcome, Chief Bongiano.
Well, great to be here, Professor. Thanks for having me.
Chief, you have firsthand insight and knowledge of the opioid epidemic that is impacting almost every community in Massachusetts. I also know you are among the law enforcement officers who played a key role in changing the mindset of seeing those using and addicted to drugs as primarily battling a health issue and not as criminals. Chief, would you mind sharing a little bit about your background and what prompted you to become one of the resources helping others who struggle with opiate and other substances?
Sure, Professor, and again, thank you. So I think really the police were cast at the forefront of this. If you asked me 30 years ago during my law enforcement career, if I thought that policing, you know, we would be treating drug abuse as a public health crisis, you know, I would have said, you know, we're going down the wrong path. And I really believe that we can't arrest our way out of the problem. And I think that we as police have done a really great job being at the front lines, as you mentioned, in battling this. You know, having resources available, co-responding with clinicians, having that, you know, those wraparound services, working with a true community-based program in which we can utilize wraparound services. There was a cutting-edge program, the Angel program, that started in Gloucester. Chief Campanello at the time was cutting-edge in that he was the first police chief that I know of across the country who said, if you walk into my police station with drugs, you will not be arrested, and I will get you services. That really changed the way in which police handled this epidemic. And make no mistake about it, Professor, this is an epidemic. I have never seen anything like this in my policing career. There are people that are addicted for a host of reasons, and this opioid crisis crosses all demographics of life. And that's what we're really seeing. And I think that Massachusetts is ahead of the curve here in our county. We've formed the Central Middlesex Police Partnerships, which is 8 police departments that are trying to make a difference.
Yeah, so, you know, Bob, Chief Bongiano, as you mentioned, you know, it hits all demographics. And you're the police chief in a relatively affluent suburban community, Bedford. How do you see the epidemic in your community? Is it getting better, getting worse? And, you know, and how's the community responded to the epidemic?
Well, at first, I think, Frank, it was not in my backyard, right? There was a denial. Because let's face it, there's a stigma associated with heroin use, opioid use, drug use, now with fentanyl. There was our community, as you mentioned, you know, is upper middle class, you know, and I think what we've learned is that it doesn't stop at the borders of Bedford, and that all communities in our region are facing this. Now, obviously at a lesser scale, but I think breaking that stigma. As I was thinking what we could talk about today, I'm wondering if I might share a brief story. And I had the permission of a dad to use this story, and I'll change the name. And I think if I might be able to share that story, it'll shed how Bedford isn't isolated from this epidemic.
Yeah, please.
You know, we are focusing here in Bedford on prevention and education and raising awareness. And again, knowing that we can't arrest our way out of the problem and handling it as a public health crisis. But when a loved one dies, the first thing that I've found out the hard way is that the family wants to know what law enforcement is doing to put the person, to hold that person accountable that sold the deadly drugs to their loved ones. And again, I have permission. I'll change her first name. And I became very close to this dad who lost his daughter 2 years ago here in Bedford. He moved to Bedford a short time ago. His daughter, who we'll call Lisa, that's not her real name, grew up in a wealthy suburb not too far from here. She was, by all accounts, an all-American girl from an all-American family. He had a very good job in the medical community, and he was living a wonderful life. But he noticed that there were some issues in the community. He was raising his daughter, so he moved to Bedford, and he wasn't even aware that his daughter was addicted to heroin until later. She died 2 years ago, last January, 2 Januaries ago, and you know, I speak to him weekly, you know, or every 2 weeks, and the conversation always comes back to, you know, what he can do. And looking at, as a family member, there's some guilt there, not identifying and not looking at those clues that his daughter was addicted to heroin, later fentanyl. That is a story about how our little community is impacted by this epidemic.
Yeah, you know, so many stories like that out there, Chief, and it's so sad. And, you know, the thing that a parent not even recognizing it and all the guilt, because I think people who are addicted to things are really good at hiding things. So it's just...
And that's what he said. You know, he was in denial. He was in guilt. He said, you know, not my daughter. You know, my daughter is very successful. She was a beautiful young lady. She had a very successful modeling career. She had great friends. But, you know, he was ignoring some signals that he should have been focused on. And now, you know, when I speak to him, I can hear the sadness in his voice. I see the sadness. Him and his wife, he said there's not a day that goes by that he doesn't think of his daughter, and if, could, would, should, you know. And the impact to him and his wife and his son has been devastating. And that is just one small example, as you mentioned, of an epidemic across this Commonwealth and across the country.
So, Chief, you talked about prevention. What is the town of Bedford doing to try to prevent the epidemic?
So we have, through the Department of Mental Health, we have a full-time clinician that's embedded with our police department. She's at a regional basis. You heard us mention the CMPP. So she runs a two-prong program funded by DMH, the Department of Mental Health, which is looking for those symptoms of mental health, diverting those from the criminal justice system. Simultaneously, we know the connection and the link between those suffering from mental illness and the link to domestic violence and substance abuse. So she also works day in and day out with those in our communities that are afflicted with substance abuse. So what we try to do, and what our program here is in Bedford and surrounding cities and towns in the CMPP area, is that if we respond to a medical overdose, a drug overdose, we try to get those wraparound services through our clinician. I think she's been on your program within 24 hours to find those wraparound services, whether that be, you know, working with our recovery coach to get that person into treatment, or whether it's working with the family to either give Narcan or to provide some education, resources, and awareness. So our clinician is a huge part of what we're doing here in Bedford in the region, and providing that outreach and providing that prevention. One of the other programs that I think would be remiss in working with you so closely on this is our drug disposal. You know, most of the police departments around here have those drug boxes that people can bring drugs and drop them off at the police station. But also having those portable kits available, the disposable kits that are eco-friendly for some that don't are unable to get out of the house and maybe drive to the police station. Not only will we in Bedford bring those packets to you, but once you dispose of your drugs properly, you can dispose of those in the trash. So, you know, we're looking at all ways of prevention and trying to raise awareness in the interim.
Yeah, thanks very much, Chief. So I know you're very active in two law enforcement organizations dealing with the opioid epidemic. One you've talked about extensively, the Central Middlesex Police Chief Partnership. The other one is Perry. So can you tell us a little bit about those organizations and how you're collaborating with each other to
Sure. You know, John Rosenthal and Chief Ryan, two dear friends who I know you know pretty well, Professor, are members of PARI. PARI was formed with Chief Campanello in Gloucester. John Rosenthal, who is just a wonderful human being, he's a gentleman with Stop Handgun Violence. He lost a loved one to an opioid overdose, and he worked with Chief Campanello to create the Angel Fund, later PARI. PARI is now a national organization which provides resources and training, you know, across multiple agencies, whether it be police or public health or the medical community, raising awareness. Matter of fact, there is a conference in Washington, D.C., December 5th and 6th. This will be, I think, the third annual. The last two were held in Boston. So PARI is we work very closely with PARI. We are grant funded to have a recovery coach through PARI. They're now working, I believe, with the AmeriCorps to provide a recovery coach for those PARI communities, and we take full advantage of it. PARI is a key player for us. They're well-resourced, and they're able to, again, give a small community like us the resources necessary, whether it be Narcan, whether it be training, whether it be a conference, to be able to better provide for our communities.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. So I want to change the topic a little bit. Just want to talk about some general things now. Do you have a sense as to why we're in this healthcare crisis? What's some of the root causes?
Well, you know, I think, to take a page from my great friend Chief Ryan, I think it's easy to sit here and point fingers. I mean, it's easy to look at Big Pharma, you know, and Purdue, and to single out some drug companies and say, you know, that the cause of this. And I think that's the easy route. You know, we can look at, you know, maybe doctors that overprescribed it, you know, but I think, you know, it's really, you know, the cause of it, you know, is a societal, I think, as a community-based issue that we need to deal with. So I don't want to cast blame on the pharmaceuticals, on the doctors. I think, you know, we all know the contributing factors to that. But I think what we're seeing here is that these are just everyday average people. You know, another case in Bedford is just, you know, an athlete who came down with an injury. You know, he broke his arm. He was prescribed, you know, some opioid, you know, some painkillers, and later became addicted. So I think that there is just so many different cases, and so many different examples of how people have become addicted and why we're in this crisis. I just don't think at this point that it's fair for me to cast blame and just say it's all on the pharmaceuticals or the medical community. You know, I think we need to, you know, we as a society need to share blame in this. I hope that makes sense. I'm not trying to dodge the question, but I think the easy thing to do, and what I don't want to do, is blame the medical community or the pharmaceutical industries, because or the FDA for approving this. You know, I think there's a lot of blame to go around. I think we need to end the blame game and look at ways to get us out of this crisis and epidemic.
No, that's totally perfect, and thank you. So how about you have a lot of passion for this problem, Bob and Chief, and how do you stay motivated? What keeps you interested and motivated?
You know, working with people like you, developing a friendship. You know, when I meet with that dad and we send a text message, knowing that there are real life stories behind the death, you know, that passion grows, because there's still a lot of work to be done. You know, like I said, when I became a police officer in 1991, I like to tell people that it was the Joe Friday of policing. And you and I, Frank, probably know that, the Dragnet series, right? Your students probably don't know that, but it was just the facts, right? We'd go to a call and we just got the basics, you know, date, time, name, place. But now policing has changed so drastically. Every day there's something new, and every day police officers are saving lives. As I tell young police officers, and as I told these two young recruits that graduated today from the Lowell Police Academy, if you think that this is CSI, where you're going to crime fight and fight crime, this isn't the job for you, because very little of what police officers do now is crime fighting. Our role has seismically changed. You know, we are aligned with public health. We are aligned with social work. We can make change in people's life, and that's what keeps me up every day. You know, seeking the good in people. Like, listen, there are good people out there that just have a bad day, and as police officers, we are on the front lines of that. And I wish our communities, I wish our Commonwealth, I wish our leaders saw that the great work that our police officers do, because it really is different what you're seeing and what's happening across the national spectrum. It's different than when you turn on the national news. Our police officers are making a difference day in and day out. And if I could support the work that our officers are doing in our community and our Commonwealth, that's my passion and that's what keeps me going.
No, thank you. Yeah, so let me ask you a different question, Chief, which is, their policymakers, let's say governors, legislatures, congressmen, if you could influence their decision making with regard to the opioid epidemic, what would you ask them for? What would you have them do?
Resources, resources, resources. You know, I think that there's still a stigma attached to this, right? And I think we're so far ahead of the curve of where we were, but I think there's so much more we could do. You know, one of the things that comes to mind is what's being debated right now is safe injection sites. I'm not proposing one way or another whether we should or shouldn't have safe injection sites. But I think what I would ask our elected and appointed officials and our national leaders is to turn over every rock and see, you know, can we be doing things differently? You know, can we look to different countries? Can we look to Canada? Can we look to Europe? You know, are there things that we could be doing different? Because at the end of the day, it's about saving lives, you know, and I think we need to pull out all the stops and to really look for saving lives. So I guess in short, what I would say to our leaders is, look at something like safe injection sites, and I'm not advocating out of the way. But look for those areas that might be controversial. Be a leader, because true leaders are not afraid to take risks. And let's take a risk, because at the end of the day, it's our loved ones that are dying.
That's a perfect response, Chief. Thank you so much. So I'm here with two students, and Clarissa Wu and Samantha Lubos, and they're helping me on this project. So if you were to give some advice to students who want to make a difference, what would you say they can do to help with this problem?
You know, and that's a looking at ways, you know, that they can make a difference. I think they're already making a difference, right, by participating in this call. I would imagine, are they going into the fields of pharmaceutical, you know, the dispensing of medical products, or are they different fields, or what are their fields of study, Professor?
Their students are doing all different things in healthcare.
Business. Okay. You know, if I could keep it to law enforcement, is that if there's been a stigma with law enforcement, maybe we can break that stigma. You know, if I could tell your students, listen, you're entering public health. You know, my wife's in public health, and I never thought that public health and policing, that paths would cross. And I just say, you know, maybe if I can raise some awareness to those people that are going into the public health and the healthcare industries, you know, your police and first responders are at the first lines, you know, your police, your fire, your EMS, you know, we're part of the solution. If we can work with the healthcare industries to make a difference, you know, I think those wraparound services are wonderful. There are police officers that are doing great things. We look to Plymouth County, which is a model across the country and how they're providing follow-up services. So I guess I would say, you know, please don't stigmatize police and law enforcement, that we want to be part of the solution, not the problem. And as you move on in your careers, if you could just remember the good work that we're doing, that police are doing, and if our paths cross, I think we could all benefit as a society from it.
That's wonderful. Thanks so much. And, you know, really appreciate you taking the time. I know you're very busy. And yeah. Are there any questions that you have of us before
we go? Yeah. You know, I just want to know that if you bring on the sheriff, I understand that the sheriff might be a guest.
Yes, I hope so.
Yeah, you know, I have some questions that I'd give you the sheriff that I could share with you, and maybe we can catch them. But no, you know, I'd just like to say thank you for this opportunity. I really appreciate what you guys are doing. As students, one of the things, may I ask a question, Professor? What do the students see as something that in gap in services? Is there a gap in services that you've identified that we might be able to close here at the front line, or in the healthcare industry, or in public health?
Hi, Chief. This is Clarissa. I am actually a student intern at Boston Medical Center. One of course, our level one. Meaning it's like level one trauma center. And honestly, I see so much of, well, I see a lot of collaboration between EMS and our ED department. And it's really encouraging to see, especially because there is so much that happens along Massachusetts Avenue. And as many Massachusetts residents know, it's not necessarily perhaps, you know, the safest place to be, or perhaps the cleanest place to be, considering the amount of homelessness and how hard the epidemic hits in our area. To answer your question, when it comes to the gaps between law enforcement and the medical profession, I think we're slowly but surely recognizing the role that law enforcement plays, especially with the help of EMS. And I think BMC has since opened up an addiction center, and since that has happened, we've seen more collaboration with Boston Police, and we've seen more of an encouraging response from law enforcement in terms of how they can help, because what we've seen that's most encouraging is the idea that everyone is coming at this epidemic from a more humbled stance, and in recognizing that perhaps what we have believed for so long that we now call stigma against the epidemic, we're recognizing that might not necessarily be the best route to go about it. And I think as I've been sitting on this call and listening to you mention the idea that you're telling these new graduates, you know, hey, this is definitely something that you've never seen before, and this is something that we all have to approach with a more open mindset and more open understanding. I think that in itself has been very encouraging and something that we're willing to work with. I think as healthcare providers, we've definitely seen that, you know, there has been a gap historically. There has been a gap between law enforcement and our healthcare community, but because of and thanks in part to this epidemic, in a sense, we're seeing more of a closer collaboration. In terms of specifically where our gaps are, I'm not sure that I can pinpoint those right now. I myself am still but a student.
It may be a bit of an unfair question, but as you were speaking, you know, I just thought of, again, another instance where law enforcement, EMS, police, fire, et cetera, in hospitals. Just this weekend, we had an overdose. We had two people that pulled up to a hotel in town, and the woman was, the Uber driver was frantically on 911. He didn't know what was happening. There was a slight language barrier, but our officer was able to respond that we were the first on scene. We administered 4 milligrams of Narcan, and we reversed what could have been a fatal overdose. While the officers were on scene, they also identified that his companion, she was becoming lethargic, slowed and slurred speech, displaying some of the signs of an overdose. We were able to Narcan her, send him off to the hospital through EMS, but working with the local hospital, having our clinician follow up with those wraparound services. And I know we have gaps with HIPAA and so forth, but at the end of the day, you know, working with the sheriff's office and working with healthcare industry, you know, breaking down those barriers so that we're able to provide those wraparound services. They weren't from Bedford, but we were able to outreach to their community where they're going back and saying, hey, listen, you know, these two people might need some wraparound services. Here's what happened. And again, it's not about violating people's HIPAA laws or violating privacy issues. It's about saving lives. And if we can share that information so that we can provide services and those critical wraparound services, that's what our goal is.
Yeah, definitely. That's very inspiring. I'm really, really happy to hear that law enforcement is constantly on the front lines of reversing those opiate overdoses. And I think one of the biggest steps that Massachusetts has taken was equipping law enforcement, EMS, first responders with Narcan, right?
Yes.
And we've seen such a huge improvement of outcomes. And I think that's perhaps why, as you mentioned, Massachusetts is on one of the states on the front lines of this epidemic and the most progressive.
So, Professor, may I ask another question? Because I see, you know, at least in Middlesex County, in dealing with District Attorney Ryan, our numbers in the county are down about 22%, where others are rising. And, you know, I don't want to knock those numbers. And there's a lot of hard work. The district attorney does wonderful work, as well as the sheriff and, you know, with the medical assisted treatment and policing. But I wonder, and I throw it out to you, are those numbers declining because first responders are doing a better job of, you know, saving people with Narcan, or is actual drug use going down? And you know, I don't want to be a naysayer because any drop is good, but I'm wondering if it's a drop because the fatalities are going down because first responders are using Narcan, and I'm wondering if we're actually really solving the problem. And I don't know the answer to that question, and I throw it out to you. And again, it might be an unfair question, but I'm struggling with that.
No, you know, it's an excellent question, and I'll tell you, I don't know, but I will share with you something that I learned. We did a study last summer of emergency room physicians. They were also seeing a decline in people visiting emergency rooms with overdoses, and their anecdotal consensus was because more people are administering Narcan on the front line. So bystanders. So. You know, I think it remains to be seen. I'm hoping that people are getting smarter. I'm hoping prescribers are getting smarter. I'm hoping community members are getting smarter, so they're staying away from it. But, you know, I don't have the answer to what I think is an excellent question.
Yeah, well, thank you.
All right. Hey, thank you so much, Chief.
Of course. Jacob. My pleasure, Professor.
Yep. Well, I'll
thank you.
See you soon. Yep. Bye.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.